Welcome, everyone. I'm Mark Steiner, and today there was a vote in the United States Congress by a vote of 228 to 205. The United States Congress voted no on the bailout plan put forward by First Treasury Paulson and negotiated between the Senate and the House, Democratic and Republican leaders, thinking they had the votes. They had the votes in the Senate, and some people were shocked, at least they acted as if they were shocked, that the House voted no. Some people cheered that, saying this was the wrong bill, that it was going to be a bill that just bailed out Wall Street and was for that industry, did nothing for the common man, did nothing for the economy as a whole, was not the answer, and it was a good thing that it failed. Three of the Maryland congressmen voted no on that bill: Elijah Cummings from Baltimore, Donna Edwards from down in Prince George's County, why am I blocking on the third one?
Was it just two, I thought?
No, three. And
not Rupersberger, not
Western Maryland.
Oh,
Roscoe Bartlett.
Bartlett. That's a surprise.
No. He's a very strict conservative. I'm not surprised at all. Yeah. He was one of the early ones who said no. We are joined in studio right now. You heard that voice over there. It's Kevin Zeese, executive director of the Campaign for Fresh Air and Clean Politics.
Yep.
Joins us once again, Dr. Bala Subramanian, is professor of business at Morgan State University, and joins us again. Bala, good to see you back.
My pleasure.
I think Anne McCarthy may be joining us in a bit. She's a business professor, former Republican candidate for comptroller here in the state of Maryland. Several economists are going to join us by phone, maybe a couple of congressmen as well. We want you to join us at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888, or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Your thoughts on this bailout, why it the failure of the bailout to succeed in Congress, and what happened. Earlier today, by the way, we spoke with Congressman Chris Van Hollen, one of the national congressional leaders, who is the congressman from the 8th District in Maryland, which is mostly Montgomery County and a few environs around that. And he was talking in my earlier conversation today about why this is an important bill that would out of the Congress, the economy would fold. We were going to play his piece today, but actually it's dated since the vote already happened. And it was a no. When we will play a bit of our interview with Congressman Edwards that took place after the vote, and she is one of the people who voted against that bill. And before we turn to Dr. Anirban Basu, who is on the phone waiting to come in, very quickly I'd like to first turn to Kevin Zeese and then turn to Dr. Bala Subramanian to kind of give their overview of what they thought happened today. And then we're going to go right to Anirban Basu. Kevin?
I think this is a good sign. People have been calling Congress aggressively for the last few days trying to stop this bailout. We've seen tremendous change from a two-page bill to a 100-page bill that has a lot more protections in it for people, but still not dealing with the issue of bankruptcy and keeping people in their homes, not specific on the CEO salary limitations. And so it still needs some improvement. And I think out of this we will get some improvement, and we probably will get a bill in the end, but I think we'll get something different than what we see right now.
Bala?
I think there was a game of chicken being played in the Congress. And the net result, the outcome of that, is that the markets have tanked today. Dow has gone down 777 points, about 300 points higher, over 10,000. And tomorrow morning, we are going to see the Asian markets go down in response to this. And that's going to come back to haunt us in sometime next week. I'm not saying the bill was the right one. I'm saying the Congress should have done something to shore up the confidence in the American financial system. And that did not happen today.
And we've also been joined by Anne McCarthy, a former assistant dean at the University of Baltimore's School of Business and who ran as a Republican for control of the state of Maryland.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Anne. Your read?
On what happened today or just...
Yeah. No, what happened today, yeah.
I think the market's just correcting itself. I think, in fact, Wall Street is holding all of us hostage and that we have to really, to step back and think about what this bill means. It's a huge social change for us, and to make it within a week would be just stupid. And so I'm glad the Congress did not, or the House did not, pass this bill.
Let's turn to our listeners at 410-319-8888. Please join us with your thoughts on this. But first, we're going to talk to Dr. Anirban Basu, who is chairman and CEO of the Sage Policy Group. Anirban, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Mark, always a pleasure.
So tell me your analysis is of what the consequences are of this vote that took place today.
Well, people are talking about games of chicken, and people are talking about you know, ideas about fairness. But the fact of the matter is a lot of Americans lost a lot of wealth today. And Congress needs to put the full faith and credit of the federal government's balance sheet behind our financial services sector. Otherwise, this crisis is going to get much, much worse, not just for Wall Street, but also for Main Street.
How do you see that happening? What do you think the fallout of this is going to be?
Well, I think that over the next 6 to 9 months, Main Street is going to feel a level of pain, economic pain, in the form of higher unemployment, diminished to compensation, and other indicia of economic harm that it has not felt since the early 1980s. And, you know, from some perspective, taxpayer can pay now or they can pay later. If they pay now, it's $700 billion. If they pay later, it comes in the form of diminished federal government tax revenues, increased federal taxes, lost jobs, lost businesses, and so forth.
So, if you can stay for a few minutes, I know our panel wants to talk about this as well, because there's a kind of interesting feelings around the room about all that. I wonder how, what else could have been in that bill that would have made it a stronger bill, do you think, that might have passed?
You know, frankly, Mark, I don't even know that it's an issue about what makes up a stronger bill or a more perfect bill. What needs to be done is something, and I think a stronger bill would have been simply one that would have passed. And if that means putting in more subsidies for community organizations, if that means putting further restrictions on compensation, then so be it. Right now, I don't think we're looking for perfection. Right now, I think we're looking for market stability. And whatever it would have taken for those 10 or 12 or 14 additional representatives to step forward and vote for this thing would have been nice. As a result, we've lost billions of dollars of additional wealth in this country.
Oh, it'll recover, Anibon. You know that.
How can you be so glib about that, Ann?
I'm not. After 9/11, it dropped too, and the market recovered. After we entered Iraq, the market went down to 7,000. And we've recovered 5 years later. I mean, I understand that this is a crisis. However, I have to say, cooler heads should prevail at some point. This is not the Depression. We do not have 25% unemployment. We do not have people, and in fact, if they want to pass something, pass relief for those single-family homeowners that only own one house so that they're not faced with foreclosure.
In fact, I think
solve the problem.
This bill would have passed if it contained bankruptcy provisions so that people who are single-family homeowners... Let me make my point. Single-family homeowners who are threatened with losing their house could have renegotiated their mortgage payments and afford to stay in their house. This bill would have passed. And frankly, Obama missed an opportunity. He was one who came out and said no to that. We can do that later. If that was in this bill would have passed, because that's what held back a lot of the Democrats who voted against it, I can tell you that. And my problem with the comments that the caller that you're making there is that if we gave the $700 billion, what's the guarantee that that's enough? Why are they not going to come back again? That number was pulled out of the air. It was not a number based on any real facts. It was a number pulled out of the air. What's to guarantee that's not going to come back again? And would you have taken the two-page bill that Paulson had put out? You sound like you're so panicked. You would pass anything.
No, the two-page bill was flawed in many ways. It basically kind of set aside the U.S. Constitution. We want the money. There is no review. There is nobody else who is going to second-guess us. And that simply cannot happen. And it was just throwing money at a systemic problem and not much thought went into it.
Anibon?
Yes.
I'd like to hear your response to some of the things you just heard.
Here's the thing. I mean, I can understand the anger towards Wall Street, but at some level, they are us. Let's remember that in 2003, 2004, 2005, when Wall Street was making lots of money, home ownership was increasing, home values were increasing, financial markets were performing well, jobs were being created in construction and many other industries. Now that Wall Street is not doing well, we are going to suffer. And either, you know, we can, you know, chop up our nose to spite our face, or we can do something about it. Again, this is not about perfection. This is about getting something done, restoring stability to the financial market so the wheels of American capitalism can begin to turn again. Otherwise, we are just dead in the water, and the rest of the world is either laughing at us or starting to feel sorry for us.
I mean, I think that the problem is and let me just throw this out to the four of you here at the moment before anybody else joins us, and we'll open the phones here in a moment at 410-319-8888 to get your thoughts. 410-319-8888 on the bailout that failed and what you think should happen. How do you think it affects your bottom line? I mean, the reality is that a lot of things are built around the stock market and around financial investment. It's almost all of our retirement funds are invested in 401ks that are invested in money market certificates. This is so while this is a bailout, could be seen as a bailout for the wealthy capitalists, and they can to bail them out for their decisions of fueled by greed in many ways. It also does, as Anirban said, affects the rest of us.
No question.
It affects the ability to as Anirban, if you could just describe for a moment, then we can. One of the things that I think confuse a lot of people argue this on both sides, is how credit is made available and how passing or not passing this bill affects the notion of credit.
Well, Mark, you know,
they're not related.
Well, wait a minute. I asked Anirban, you can come back.
Well, credit is largely created through our banking system. And one of the keys is that banks are willing to lend to each other, because that, during certain moments, gives individual banks the capacity to make loans. And of course, a certain amount of money has to be kept within the bank to take care of, depositors. In the bank, when they seek to get their money, that money needs to be there. The problem right now, Mark, is that there's such a lack of confidence in our banking system that banks won't even lend to each other, let alone to businesses or to prospective homeowners. Capitalism is shutting down. Eventually, this has to translate into more job loss, more failed businesses, including restaurants, retailers, and many, many others, including in the state of Maryland, by the way, which now has the highest unemployment rate it's had in 4.5 years. Virginia is at a 12 to 13 year high in unemployment. Michigan is at 8.9%. California is at 7.7%, and that's just the beginning. Things are about to get much, much worse. And so again, that's how credit is created. The banking system is not functioning. The banks don't trust one another. The depositors are pulling money out of many of the banks that have been weakened. That was the story at IndyMac, at Wachovia, at WaMu, and others are sure to follow.
And you were trying to say what?
I was going to say that this is a difference between espoused theory and theory in use. Anirban is right. The credit system is a system of American capitalism, and that being able to borrow and lend is critical to everything that we do. However, there's no guarantee that this bill will make banks start lending to each other. Absolutely none. The Fed has cut the federal funds rate again and again, and they haven't been lending to each other. There's no guarantee that they're going to start lending to each other just because of the $700 billion.
In fact, what we saw already starting to happen was the lobbyists lining up with their hands out. Giuliani, you know, his firm was getting into, how do we get our share of this bailout? I mean, everyone was starting to pick at the trough here to get more and more money. This is the chickens coming home to roost. This is an economy that's been in a downward spiral for a long time, not been investing in the foundation. This trickle-down nonsense is not going to work, especially when we're trickling down debt. We got to start to build a foundation for our economy, not bail out the top.
Bala, and then Anirban, and then I have a question.
No, I agree with you that we can't bail out the people at the top. They have been getting rich on, you know, without any help from us.
Yeah. And well, a lot of help from us, actually.
And they can go down the tubes. It's okay. But I think we do need to take care of the man in the street, someone who's losing a job because the companies cannot get credit. We need to take care of the depositors who have, let's say, more than 100,000 in a bank, let's say 200,000, 300,000. They are not covered by FDIC. So we need to focus way down in the economic pyramid and not focus at the top. And I think that's a major flaw.
That's a great point.
Well, before we open the phones here, this question I want to throw out to the four of you, because I know Anirban has to leave in a few minutes. I'll let him take a crack at it and all of you, because I think that, well, the three of you in this room, at least two of you in this room, are glad the bill failed. Bala, I think, is somewhere.
I would like to see something pass, which is a little more broad based than simply, you know, based on trust of the Secretary of Treasury and the Federal Reserve.
Yes.
The problem is that people who defeated this bill in Congress, for the most part, represented either progressive, towards the left, Democrats, very conservative, to the right, Republicans. some blue dog Democrats who were saying, you know, we're here for the working man. It's not doing anything for the working man, as conservative blue dog Democrats will do. And so with that divided House in opposition, and even the divided House who voted for it for different reasons, how is anything going to get done? Where is the ability to kind of figure out what, let's listen for real fast here for a moment. Let's listen to both what Pelosi and Bonner had to say to one another today, Bonner being the House Minority Leader and Pelosi, of course, being the Speaker of the House. Let's listen to what they had to say and then talk about this divide and how it's ever going to be overcome.
I think that we need to renew our efforts to find a solution that Congress can support. I do believe that we could have gotten there today had it not been for this partisan speech that the Speaker gave on the floor of the House. I mean, we've put everything we had into getting the votes to get there today. But the Speaker had to give a partisan voice that poisoned our conference, caused a number of members that we thought we could get to go south.
Now, I just spoke with Secretary Paulson. I said, Mr. Secretary, we delivered on our side of the bargain. You impressed our members, and the President impressed the members about the gravity of the situation, that action was necessary to stabilize the markets and to protect the taxpayer. Clearly, that message has not been received yet by the Republican caucus.
And that was House Speaker Nancy Pelosi before her House Minority Leader John Bonner. Where do you find a place for this to work? I mean, because the ideas are so different. I mean, on the one hand, they're the Republican interventionists who are built around George Bush and Paulson. They're the Republican rejectionists built around Senator Shelby
I think you hear the same as between us. We basically agree. I'm pointing to one of the guests here. I mean, we're on the Republican and progressive side of things, and you know we're coming. I think it's populist economics. That is where the common ground will be. Populist economics. All three of us in this room.
To me, it's common sense economics.
Well, that's true, too. I mean, protect the base, build. And all three of us are saying the same thing.
Well, Anibon, before you have to run, let me ask you what you think. Oh, Anibon's gone. I didn't know he was gone. Okay, I'm sorry, Anibon. Bala?
Well, I agree with this because the focus has been on the wrong sector. We are looking at the banks. We are looking at the global interactions, which is fine. They are the underpinning of our system, but we are also forgetting the man in the street, the middle class that is suffering from this and the potential impact. If the middle class, if the Congress had done something to protect the individuals and the small guy, small person rather than the mega corporations, this would have passed.
Exactly.
One of the things that some of the Democrats wanted to see that the Republican opposition to the bill rejected, which is one of the reasons it wasn't in the bill. I mean the Republican opposition to the bill as well as the Republicans who were for the bill, is the idea that people would be allowed to go to bankruptcy court if they were facing mortgage crisis in their first loan, because the law states you can't go to bankruptcy court if your house is in default and it's your first home, but you can if it's your vacation home, but you can't if it's your primary home.
Isn't that ridiculous?
So that's one of the things that was kicked out.
The opposite of common sense.
It's like saying, you know, if your house is on fire, we'll fight it if it's in the kitchen, but not if it happens to be in the bedroom. You know, it's something ridiculous. The fire is a fire, and it's going to burn you down.
That's so right.
Some of it is, again, as you said, common sense. It lacks common sense solutions.
I hope they go that direction rather than what the right wing Republicans are saying, which is this whole mandatory insurance thing. You know, I think that's a mistaken direction. I think the right direction is the bankruptcy provision, protect the homeowner.
This is like the blood supply. Once it's contaminated, it's almost impossible to stop. So what you need to do is stop it from being contaminated in the beginning. And only 4% of mortgages in the United States less than 4% are in foreclosure. That means 96% of our mortgages are being paid on a monthly basis. It's a solid, I mean.
So then the problem, it seems to me in some ways, folks, I'm sorry, I keep saying I'm open the phones, but I just want to get something on the table here, is that the problem is spinning from the top.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of people, Andrew Sullivan argued the other night, who is a more conservative writer, who's a very interesting thinker, who said that, you know, like many others, saying it's the fault of people who are taking the mortgages that are easy to get without money down for homes they can't afford. So it's their fault this is happening. Others are arguing, well, wait a minute, no, it's the other side. It's from the top that we need much more massive regulation, as they did during Roosevelt's era, on banking and finance to make sure this doesn't happen, that the market, a controlled marketplace is a happier marketplace rather than one that runs wild with itself. So, that's what it's going to come down to, I think, is that debate.
Do you want a response?
I do.
Okay. First of all, I would say this. It's not the fault of the people who took out mortgages that they could not pay. It's the fault of a system that said to them, take out an interest-only loan and don't worry about it because your income will go up over time. And so
the value of the house will go up.
So the value of the house. And the problem with that is that it's not that we need more regulation. We needed the Fed to be regulating during these past 7 years. But no, you know, I'm sorry. This is probably not a popular position, but Alan Greenspan and the Fed pursued a strategy of low interest rates in order to encourage home ownership so that we did not go into a deep depression after 9/11. End of story. Plus, in the 90s, they overturned the Glass-Steagall Act, which was the act that they put in place after the Depression.
And that was a big blunder.
It was a huge blunder.
And this result was predicted. When that blunder was happening, people who opposed it said, this is what you're going to see, and now we're seeing it.
This has been a long time in coming.
And Alan Greenspan said later, I didn't see it coming.
I mean,
that's kind of too late.
He saw the irrational bubble in the market, but he didn't see in the stock market, but he didn't see it in the housing market.
But let's go. Anubhan Basu has called back, and Stephen Isberg has called in, and Maria, Greg, and Mike, and Craig are holding on to be part of this conversation as well, who are listeners. Steve, welcome to the program. And Anubhan, welcome back. Did we just lose Anubhan again? Okay. Steve, you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Steve, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Mark?
Good. Have you heard much of this discussion?
I've heard the whole thing. I've been listening on my computer since you started.
That's a good thing. The computer's lovely. Go ahead. So what would you like to add to this?
Well, let me add something that hasn't been said yet. I took a look at this bill and how it would work out. And the interesting thing, I think one of the interesting points that's been made already was when Ann mentioned that it's only 4% of the U.S. mortgages that are in default right now, and that's a very low rate. You know, what this bill proposes to do is to enable the Fed to come in and selectively purchase mortgage-backed securities and other securities that are being offered for sale by companies that are having problems. So, you know, in a sense, what it amounts to is a way of subsidizing the value of the assets on these companies' balance sheets. And, you know, these are the same companies that are suffering right now because their asset values have declined, but not all because of what's happened in the mortgage-backed securities market. I mean, a lot of these companies like AIG experienced problems because they were overextended in this credit derivatives insurance end of their business.
Exactly.
And they started having liquidity problems for that reason. Lehman Brothers was overextended with short positions and then not covering them properly. So, you know, what this amounts to is you know, kind of a subsidization of that very, very poor risk management behavior on the part of these companies. And it doesn't get right back to using taxpayer money to help taxpayers out.
That's right.
So, you know, in that regard, you know, they could go in and go ahead and buy these securities, but what it'll do is simply distort market prices even worse,
yes,
provide subsidies to companies that don't necessarily deserve it, you know, correcting the problem that wasn't really the source of their crisis, and that is, you know, what's happened in these derivative markets that no one really understands at this point. I mean, no one knows exactly about the depth and the magnitude of this market. And then, you know, when you talk about the economy, you know, what I'm also very surprised not to hear more people talking about is the fact that, you know, U.S. wages, you know, U.S. real income has gone down the last 7 years. And part of the reason is that, you know, what we earn in this country is adjusting and realigning to the world labor markets. And, you know, I don't think what we're seeing right now is a recession. And I've said this on your show before, Mark. I think what we're seeing is a realignment long term. And I don't know if we can expect income levels to rise in this country for any substantial amount of time, regardless of what we do to rejuvenate the economy. If you take a look at the economy, most of the numbers say it's very healthy. The companies are doing very well. Companies are making profits, but they're global profits. So So it's really a question as to what the government or anyone else can get in, can do to get in there and stimulate the economy.
Well, let me open the phones here. Then I want the three of you to jump into this and what Steve was just saying, because I think that this is something that people really haven't tackled, that the world is changing, that we're in a world economy. This is America is no more. People have been saying this for a long time. America is no longer the big gun on the block. You have to deal with China. You have to deal with the European Union. You have to deal with the growth of India. You have to deal with the growth of Latin American economies that are all affecting this economy, and it's not all here. And that we're seeing a downward trend in American life in many ways for the broad masses, and that may continue. 410-319-8888. Maria, you've been holding on for a long time. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Mark. How are you?
Well, Maria.
I just want to say that, surprisingly, I agree with Ann McCarthy, many of her comments. And I want to say
I see this
as an opportunity. I see this.
Maria, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Go ahead.
I see this as an opportunity. We need to concentrate on rebuilding our economy through rebuilding our infrastructure. I'm having a lot of trouble hearing you guys.
We're not saying anything. We're listening to you.
We're listening, yeah.
Maria?
I'm still here. I'm just having trouble hearing you guys.
So finish your thought.
Okay. I see this as an opportunity. We need to take, if they want to pull $700 billion out of the air, which they did, that needs to go on the bottom of our economy. It does need to go to keep individual homeowners in their homes. They can pull $700 billion out. We could have a national health care system. We could certainly have all manner of funding toward rebuilding our infrastructure. There is no way that we should be bailing out these greedy people on Wall Street who have tens of million dollars in their own bank account that they're not even talking about giving back. See, that really upsets me.
All right, Maria.
So that's about it.
Thank you, Maria.
Thank you.
Let me read this email that came in. Robert writes in, noted economist Noriel Rubini thought the bailout bill was worthless as a solution to the problem at hand. He explained it this way, quote, "Whenever there's a systemic banking crisis, there's a need to recapitalize banking financial systems to avoid an excessive and destructive credit contraction. But purchasing toxic liquid assets of the financial system is not the most effective and efficient way to recapitalize the banking system. The Scandinavian banking crisis, Sweden, Norway, and Finland, that are a model of how banking crises should be resolved, there was not government purchase of bad assets. Most of the recapitalization occurred through various injections of public capital into the banking system." Steve, why don't you start that one off?
Well, there's a little bit of background noise in there, Mark, so I think I heard most of what you said. You know, again, when you talk about the capitalization of the banking system, now what you're talking about is you know, the amount of money that's coming in from outside investors to fund the liquidity in the banking system and the financial system. So you're talking about depositors who put money into banks, and you're talking about investors who are buying the bonds that are issued by the banks, issued by companies like Lehman Brothers. When you talk about the financial institutions now, you have to include AIG and Lehman and all those companies who invest other people's money, have to raise their money on their own. And, you know, part of the reason for the problem, again, is a lot of these financial institutions have not just been acting as brokers and intermediaries facilitating transactions, they've been trading on their own accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of Lehman Brothers, you know, Lehman Brothers went bust because they mismanaged their own portfolio. They mismanaged their own trades. So, you know, one real question you have to ask is, you know, is it the purpose of these financial companies to be in there trading on their own account, acting as traders, and very often taking positions against the investors whose very money they're using to trade? I mean, there's a real philosophical question as to what these companies should be doing out there. I mean,
go ahead and
recapitalize them, but what are they going to do with all that capital once they get their hands on it?
Steve, we have to take a very short break. We're going to come right back, and I want to hear what Bala Subramanian says in response to that as well. Join us, 410-319-8888. Greg, Mike, and Craig, you've been very patient. We're going to come to you and the other calls when we return.
Thank you.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. We're in the studio with Kevin Zeese, Executive Director of the Campaign for Fresh Air and Clean Politics, Dr. Bala Subramanian, who is Professor of Business here at Morgan State University, Anne McCarthy, who is used to be Dean of the Baltimore School of Business, University of Baltimore School of Business, and a former Republican candidate for Comptroller here in the state of Maryland. Steve Isberg is on the phone. He is Finance Professor at the University of Baltimore, and you're on the phone at 410-319-8888, and a very patient Greg in Charles Village, you're on the air.
One comment and then one question for
sure.
The great panel.
Mm-hmm.
The one comment is Mr. Anibon Basu was making this comment about how we are the market. And, you know, I love that there's an NPR Marketplace show I listen to once in a while, and I like it, but they say the same thing. And isn't the ideology of the market is a competition of interests? It's not we. And when, you know, when somebody becomes homeless, say, in Baltimore, you know, the head of Goldman Sachs doesn't come down and say, you know, we are the market and put them in a house. And so at the same time, they shouldn't be asking taxpayers to say we are the market and put them back into their five mansions. So I just think that that's intellectually not only wrong, but maybe even dishonest. But the second thing is, the question would be, you know, the head of the Treasury Secretary is a former head of Goldman Sachs. He was in Goldman Sachs CEO in 2006,
right,
involved in all this disaster, and yet nobody's questioning whether he's the one that really should be both leading the solution and distributing the money.
That's so, a very good, interesting point. Bala, why don't you take a shot at that first, and we're going to introduce Elijah Cummings. Seth, this is a congressman who's also joined us by phone, who's one of the men who voted against this bill today. Bala?
The question of recapitalizing, of injecting capital again into the banking system, I agree with you. That was a great point. We cannot throw good money after bad just to recapitalize institutions. But again, we need to take a look at the whole system of how we have been, how we have let that go down to this point. And the capital has to, you know, we need a new mechanism, a new, possibly a new set of regulations. I'm not saying we go back to a completely regulated market. It will not work. But some way of ensuring that the money that we are going to put into the system is going to not going to go the same way as what has been there. I think that's a critical thing.
Let me probably turn over the two guests. Welcome Elijah Cummings. The three guests, excuse me. Elijah Cummings, who is 7th District Congressman. Elijah, welcome. Good to have you back with us.
Good to be with you all.
Now, you're one of the three Maryland congressional representatives who voted no on this bill.
Yes.
And we've spoken to one other today, Donna Edwards. Mm-hmm. So now what?
Well, tomorrow I will be we'll be meeting a group of us who are interested in this issue. We'll be meeting trying to figure out where we go from here. One of the things that we had said before we left the floor today is that we would be putting a piece of legislation together urging the SEC and the FDIC to do what they can to bring stability until such time that we can get a bill passed. I just think that we need to go back to the drawing board. And when I say go back to the drawing board, I don't mean erase everything, because I think there was some good progress made. But I think we started, Mark, with a... I think the Bush administration came to us intentionally with a proposal that was devoid of specificity, and I think it was there, and I think what they basically did was put us in a position where they had a proposal that was all the way to the right, and even when we tried to work with them, our leadership, that is the Democratic leadership, to compromise, we were still all the way to the right, and there was not enough there for those people going through foreclosure and going through the problems that they are going through. And so we've got to tighten that up some kind of way. We also got to have more control, I think, on by Congress. Somebody, one of your guests just mentioned Secretary Paulson. Keep in mind that Secretary Paulson has unprecedented power under the bill that went down today to basically distribute this $700 billion. Which is incredible to me.
Elijah, if you have a few minutes here, I'd like to let, since we have four people with us, all who know something about this business, I'd like to kind of pose questions to you about where you think might come next might be important. Could you do that for a few minutes?
Well, I didn't hear you.
I said we have four guests here today, all talking about this issue.
Okay.
Business people and economists and social people.
Sure.
And let me first start to Steve Nisberg, who's a finance professor at the University of Baltimore. And Steve, if you have a question for the congressman.
Well, actually, I want to say thank you, Congressman, because you're my congressman, and I called your office last week and asked you not to vote for the bill that they'd proposed. So thank you from a constituent.
Sure.
You know, again, tying into the point that the last caller made, Mark, and this, I think, is an important point that shouldn't be lost on people, and it chimes right in with what the congressman has said. You know, Mr. Paulson, coming from Wall Street himself, I'm sure his Rolodex is full of contacts from that neighborhood, and I am sure that those people were calling him quite frantically over the last few weeks, warning him of the crisis that was coming down. And if you take a look at his behavior over the last few weeks, you know, for someone who is in charge, arguably, of the largest financial system in the world, he kind of scared me a little bit with how much he panicked. I don't think that he added to the solution to the problem in terms of his reactions. And, you know, I think that the point that the congressman makes is important when we recognize the fact that, you know, a lot of the people who are in trouble here, people who got pulled into these bad loan situations, are people that aren't well represented down in Washington. And I think, you know, votes like Mr. Cummings are, you know, taking a stand for them. But Mr. Cummings, what do you see? What would you like to see in this bill something that would establish some permanent stability? And you know, what might you do about derivatives trading and things like that? Has any discussion taken place in that area?
Yeah, well, first of all, let me go back to what my biggest sticking point was. I was concerned about trying to, and you probably know this, the bankruptcy provisions. We wanted it so that people could have their debt restructured in bankruptcy. That was a big deal. Let me tell you something. If that had been a part of this legislation, it would have passed.
Exactly.
I have absolutely no doubt about it. It would have passed very easily. And basically, that was something that in these negotiations, they just were not going to hear of it and weren't going to have it. So, and the other thing that I was concerned about is that control. If you really read the bill very carefully, basically what they've said is that the Congress can critique what Mr. Paulson does and others,
right,
but that's about it. Well, $700 billion is, you know, that's not tip money. That's a whole lot of money. and see, I think there's a piece of this that is escaping some people, and that is that these are taxpayer dollars. I mean, this is not like somebody just some money falling out of the sky. And so basically what I was interested in is trying to also see, make sure that as far as this golden parachute and the salaries, that if we are going to put money into these corporations, then I think that there should have been even stronger language as to, you know, the salaries of these folks, because after all, this is money that are coming from our taxpayers. Now, as far as reform is concerned, I think that I know that we're going to begin hearings. I also sit on the Government Reform Committee,
mm-hmm,
with Henry Waxman, and Henry and I were just talking today. We start our hearings next Monday or Tuesday, where we're going to actually begin to look deep into this whole issue and how we got here, and start making recommendations, doing our investigation, and then making recommendations as to reform. Again, we've got to see how those hearings go, but clearly there has to be a reform portion of this so that we don't run into the kind of problems that we find ourselves in now. But keep in mind, and I'm saying, I want to be clear, we need to do something, and we will do something. I anticipate that Congress will be back very soon to try to address this issue, to shore up our investment our confidence. But at the same time, I think then we have to look and see what, get an understanding of what happened and what kind of reforms would be appropriate. And I think Congress will do that.
Any quick questions here before we can move on to a...
Congressman, I've been troubled by the control issue that you mentioned.
Yes.
I did see the original draft in the Washington Post that gives unprecedented powers to the Secretary of Treasury.
Yes.
It's totally unacceptable. Basically, we are shredding the Constitution, giving him a check for nearly $1 trillion. It'll be $1 trillion, trust me. And then say, no questions asked. Mm-hmm. How would you address this control issue?
I think basically what you've got to do is you've got to have members of Congress appointed by the... They have provisions in the bill where certain people will be appointed by the Speaker and others. But then you've got to give those people a certain level of authority, and you've got to have it so that the Congress constantly has a check on what is happening. And I think we need more checks than what we have. It's going to take a little bit of work, but this is something that is doable, and we will do it. We will get it done. I don't want people sitting out there thinking that. I think every single member of Congress wants to resolve this problem. We have different ways that we want to resolve it, but we all want to resolve it, and because of that, it will be resolved. It's too important.
Congressman, you said everything I want to hear. I'm also a constituent of yours, and I appreciate that, and thank you very much for your vote.
Thank you.
Two questions. On the bankruptcy issue, I agree with you. If that was in there, it would pass. What's the rationale for opposing it? And secondly, is anyone talking about how to pay for this, like some kind of a tax on people with over $5 million income or something, some kind of additional source of revenue from the wealthy?
The bankruptcy issue, they tell me, is that it's something that could never get through the Senate. As a matter of fact, that's why Obama, who I support, had said that, you know, let's take that off the table for at least for the moment. He didn't say he was against it. Right. He said, let's not deal with it right now, because he felt that that would be something that would just scuttle any deal automatically, and so they wouldn't get to first base. And he said that later on we'll come back to it and try to get it in. Well, and I think the reason why the banking industry and others don't want that in there is because they just only want the idea that these mortgages can be revisited. And that's the only thing I can think of. And so they made it clear that's not going to happen. What was your second question?
Any kind of source of funds to pay for this from some kind of tax on?
There was a proposal with regard to a tax that, but we didn't get very far with it. The bill is structured right now. You know, the president, the new president, would have to come back, I think it's in 4 or 5 years, and if we didn't get our money back through sales or whatever, that he would have to propose a way to get that money back. I mean, it's very, a lot of the language is sort of trust me, we hope to do, you can do, you might do, and I think we need a little bit more solid language, and so of saying this is what will be done. I think that was another concern of many members of Congress. We're talking about a lot of money, $700 billion, and people are saying, wait a minute, these are taxpayers' dollars. And there's another thing that we've sort of skirted over, gentlemen, and that's this. There has been a loss of trust with this administration. I'm not knocking the administration, but I can tell you that if you listen to the debate today, not only was it on the Democratic side, it was on the Republican side. They've seen this administration come in and say, trust me with the war. They said, trust me with prescription drugs. We found out they were a lot more than what they were. And I could go on and on. And so then when a real case comes up, although they may be accurate, because of the trust factor lacking, there's a problem.
Very quickly, before we run out of time here and have a couple other people coming on, Anne McCarthy, former dean of the Business School, University of Baltimore, do you have something to say?
Oh, well, I have a question for the congressman. I, too, am a constituent, and I am pleased with your vote today, so thank you. Here's my fundamental question. You know, you would have to have been asleep in the past 5 years to not understand that when 110% loan-to-value loans were being made, that it wasn't like the savings and loan crisis all over again. I looked at my colleagues and I'm like, doesn't this sound like the savings and loan crisis? And kind of, I wonder, where has Congress been? Where has the Fed been? Where have all of you who are supposed to be overseeing the regulations we do have in place, where have you been?
I think that's an outstanding question. Well, I got appointed to the JEC committee, the Joint Economic Committee, not very long ago. And one of the first issues that I raised was, you know, where is this going to end? You cannot have people getting loans that they cannot afford, loans ballooning into payments that they have not even qualified for.
Mm-hmm.
And and then tell them that you'll be able to refinance in a few years before it balloons, and then the next thing you know that it balloons, but the value of the housing has gone down. I've asked Bernanke that question several times, and he kept saying to me, you know, it's going to work out, it's going to work out. I've done this in public hearings, and what can we, and tried to get them to help us address that. I think a lot of people fell asleep on this one. I really do. And now we've got to turn this around, but we've got to do it right. We've got to do it right. And we need people like all of you, and your suggestions, by the way, as to how to best do that. We are meeting tomorrow morning, a group of us, and to put forward some legislation that hopefully, and we're going to sit around the table and try to figure out how to take what we already have and make it better. But we know that we have to act, and we know that we have to act soon, but we want to act properly and make sure it's done right. And so if you've got some suggestions, I'd be happy to hear them. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to go.
All right. Elijah Cummings, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you all.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Mark, real quick.
Steve, go ahead.
Mark?
Yeah, Steve, go ahead.
Yeah. Real quick about the bankruptcy law. It's interesting that, you know, the bankruptcies are coming up over and again. A lot of people, it's kind of lost on a lot of people, that back in 2005, October 2005, we had a new bankruptcy law go into effect. And the credit industry worked very, very hard to push legislation through that makes it much, much more difficult for consumers to take advantage of bankruptcy as a way to restructure debt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, somewhere someone doesn't want to give that up. And I think that's what you're seeing. You know, I think that may be part of what's going on politically here behind the scenes, is that, you know, they work very hard to get those bankruptcy laws tightened up. Now they don't want to start cracking the door open to loosen them at all. So it's an interesting political conflict there.
So how does Congress get to the point where A, that you deal with bankruptcy, but B, the whole question of regulation and what regulation should be? I mean, this is the kind of consequence of deregulation from Reagan through Clinton. And some people put it at the feet of that. And where that's a big piece of this that they're going to have to argue and fight out is whether or not it should be new regulations, whether they should be including much more the financial industry in this, and how that would work. And this is an international financial industry now, not just American we're talking about. Bala?
Mark, I mentioned earlier in a different program that we need overarching regulations. You know, we have been compartmentalizing regulations, regulating banking, stock markets, investment banks, and what little is left is kind of piece by piece. They don't form a whole set of regulations. We need an overarching we need a new set of regulations that cover all these turfs and also coordinate with the rest of the world. Whether we like it or not, there is a whole lot of overseas investment in this country. Mm-hmm. The minute we make them nervous, they're going to pull it out. It's already, there is a flow, outflow of funds from this country. That is going to aggravate the situation. So we need to coordinate with them, restore the confidence, and hopefully we can avoid something like this for another 50 years if we do it right.
What do you think we should do about this economy and the crisis facing America and the fact that Congress voted the bailout bill down and now they have to figure out it and America has to figure out what to do next? 410-319-8888 is the number here. 410-319-8888. Or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And Sally writes in, there were so many obituaries to Wall Street in the New York Times this weekend. It kind of made me laugh, as if the masters of the universe are going to shrug and say, oh, well, we had a good run, time to join the middle class. Clearly, the masters of the universe are just going to create new markets and new schemes to make money, as smart as of them began doing several years ago with hedge funds. It's a dream to imagine that this crisis is going to usher in some kind of new American economy. The new American economy may have some different titles and different names, but fundamentally, it will remain the same. There will be masters of the universe making money by moving money around at the expense of the rest of us, says Sally in Mount Vernon. John, is this but true?
Well, it's always been that way, hasn't it? And I the derivatives market's been mentioned. I just want to mention something about that, because I think the one reason why they don't want to see the bankruptcy laws on homes is because if you solve the home problem, then people look and say, well, what's the real problem? I think the real problem is this derivatives market. It's a bunch of paper investments that are very unclear. It's multiple times bigger than the whole world economy. It's literally worth hundreds of trillions of dollars. And there's no way to bail that out. And so it's nice to blame it on this the subprime problem, which is part of the problem. But you can solve that with bankruptcy issues, and that problem goes away. But I guarantee the economic crisis will not go away because they have been putting money into stuff that's vapor.
Yeah, that's very true, Mark. The mathematical economists and the mathematical financial magicians here have been developing these sophisticated contract schemes for years, and we've seen them melt down several times. I mean, you go back to back in 1996 when the long-term capital. Crisis hit. You know, that was a small blip on the radar screen compared to what's happening now. And here you have these very institutions who are really responsible for creating these, what amount to be fabricated securities. Now they're all applying for membership in the banking community where they can hide behind FDIC insurance. Most PhDs in finance don't necessarily understand the depth of what's going on there. I mean, I tried to explain some of what's going on with credit insurance to one of my colleagues, very smart colleague, and very, very confusing, complex. You know, we're only seeing the tip of the iceberg here. We have no idea what's under the surface in terms of the size and the potential volatility.
Well, what's under the surface of the show are the callers and listeners. Let's go to one of them now, 410-319-8888. And E in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to ask why people always talk about money, but never talk about the wealth, the resources, that without money is nothing.
What do you mean by, are you talking about gold, oil? What are you talking about?
Yeah, food, gold, oil. It's much more complex. You know, food is worth something. And without money, food is still worth something. But without anything like gold or oil or food or machines or people, all of that's... the money is just worthless.
Yeah, I think what this caller is trying to say, Mark, is that the real value in the world is in the real economy.
That's right. Not in the financial
economy, and it's up to the financial economy simply to provide the means.
Okay, but then if that's the case, Steve, I've been trying to get to this for months with this question, even before the crisis really bubbled over like this, and questions I've been asking for actually years, then what's the relationship between this financial market and the real economy, and how do you begin to make it work? And what role does the government play in that? And let's go around the room here real fast. Steve, you can start us off.
Well, again, you know, I think one of the reasons we are in the trouble that we're in is that, you know, financial institutions are in it for themselves and not necessarily in it to facilitate the movement of capital from one group, which would be the group that's saving, to another group, and that would be the group of companies that needs that money for investment capital. You know, they've taken their piece in fees, but they've also now gotten in there and they've acted as trading companies. So, you know, take a look at any manufacturing company, any company in industry. Constellation's a perfect example, Enron a perfect example. You know, very good companies when it comes to doing what they do as a core business, providing electricity. Where did they mess up? Well, their trading department screwed them up. Where did Enron mess up? Well, it was all about trading. You know, I mean, what they're doing is, you know, they're getting into an industry where they really have no business.
Well, then, is there a way, and should the government stop this kind of trading? Is there a way, should they be regulated and stopped, or is it just part of what the marketplace is, Bala?
Well, you know, unfortunately, you can't rely on the self-control of the individual companies to do it, and that's when people call for regulation.
Bala?
I agree there. We do need some regulation. You cannot totally regulate all the financial markets. The trading, unbridled trading, uncontrolled trading has been the downfall of a lot of banks, a lot of financial institutions. We cannot let that happen. Actually, when they go down, they are taking down the economy. They have a huge impact on the economy. Mm-hmm. So there need to be some control on this type of financial instruments and trading.
I wonder if something somebody said earlier, though, it really might be where we are, which is that we're seeing we are in the middle of a great shift. A great shift that we can do little about, Anne McCarthy.
A great shift in capitalism?
A great shift in the world economy, period.
Oh, in the world economy.
And this is evening it out, and America's just on the losing end of some of this, and America's stuck with it.
I do have to say, Steve, I loved your comment earlier about how I thought it was so accurate that the average, you know, wage of the American worker has gone down in the last 10 years, or at least flattened, except for, guess who? The financial wizards and all those CEOs. And I've always thought to myself, why is it that we insist on paying American workers the same wage that, or not the same, but we say that, you know, China and India and Taiwan are putting pressure on their wages, but why is it that they don't put pressure on CEO wages? Because you know those CEOs of those Chinese and especially
Taiwanese.
Well,
they may start to now. They may start to. And I think, you know, I think what this is really, for me, what's so good about today is it's an opportunity for real populist rebellion. Really, wages have been stagnant since 1973 for most Americans. It's not a new phenomenon. This is a long-term phenomenon. We got through it by having two people working in each family, and so we could buy and wait. Things got cheaper because of the world buying from outside the United States. So we got through it. But the reality is we've had stagnant wages for a long time. Today shows the people can make a difference. The Congress reacted because people pressured them. So I say call Congress, 202-224-3121, and keep pushing them. Go to freshaircleanpolitics.net, send a click and send letter. Okay. Push Congress to do the right thing.
I will say this, though. The American economy coughs, and the whole place, the whole world.
And I have to cough now to say thank you all for being here today. It's been a pleasure. Great conversation. Kevin Z. Balasubramanian, Anne McCarthy, Anibana Basu, Steve Isberg. The Mark Steiner Show is produced by Jessica Phillips and Justin Levy, engineered this hour by Zachary Coleman. And thanks to Andrew Epic for his help today. To podcast this and all of our past shows, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM. The voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner, and take care.